Welcome to another episode of Unimportant Film Opinions here. When we started recording, we found out that Cole had 120 tabs open. You know, we were preparing everything, starting it up. So I hit the record button so that you guys could kind of see that process and maybe make some sense out of why he has 120 tabs, because I don't understand it. But you guys can come up with your own opinion. I don't know. I don't get it. Anyway, welcome.
I mean, it's why.
Do you ever actually go back to them? Is my question.
Yes. Every day, I open one and then I go back to the old one and close the old one and open a new one. Sometimes two.
You have lost the point of tabs.
No, it's multiplicative. All right. See, one births two, two births four, so on and so forth, okay?
Use favorites or windows. I don't get it. That's too many. If you have 120 tabs open, first of all, are you using Chrome or Firefox?
Chrome, because Firefox sucks dick a little bit now.
How much does... Yeah. I still use Firefox, but we're not going to get into that. How much does Chrome suggest? Like 15?
20? I don't read their suggestions. Well, they don't rule my life. I have my own life. Fuck them.
And how many videos do you have open that you're just paused halfway through? I don't know. It sounds like a whole bad thing to me, man. I don't know.
Listen, all right. I got 1 gigabyte of internet speed. Okay, I'm getting 32 gigabytes of RAM pretty soon. All right. I'm living fine right now. Okay.
It doesn't matter. 120 tabs. I'm not gonna lie, it's like a pet peeve. I feel like you've lost the point of a fucking tab.
I think what I live my life is nice. All these tabs, you know, keep me company. You know, I feel safe and secure of all these tabs. Okay, blanket. Okay,
does it take you a while to sleep at night knowing that like your brain is so unorganized because you got so many things going on, so many tabs open?
Here's the way I think of it, okay? I use an analogy of a blanket. It's kind of like you have a giant blanket over you, right? And in each, like, you know, packet of the blanket is full of a new kind of candy. Whenever you pour one candy, you open up a different packet, and there's a whole new candy inside, or new chips. I don't know. Maybe some broccoli in there. Who knows? Maybe like a pizza. It's like a never-ending box of chocolates.
What if someone came over and clicked out of your tabs?
That's happened before, and I have a backup now.
You do not.
I have an app for Google Chrome called Session Buddy that saves it whenever it's closed down in case I want to reopen all my tabs again.
And how long does it take to reopen your tabs on average?
about a minute, about a full minute, maybe. About 1 minute of time.
And with that, I just want to welcome everybody to another episode of Unimportant Film Opinions. I'm Colby.
Cole. I'm Devin.
Today, we're going to talk about Big Trouble in Little China. Now, I don't know, Devin, do you want to give us a quick summary of the movie? Do you mind, since this was your pick, not to throw you under the bus or anything?
No problem at all. Starts off with Kurt Russell is a truck driver, comes into Chinatown, and gets himself caught up in this whole thing going down with an ancient sorcerer that's trying to not fulfill a prophecy, but he stays immortal by marrying girls with green eyes and then like sacrificing them, and the whole movie he's helping his friend try to get his green-eyed girl back from the sorcerer.
I'm going to pause you right there and say thank you for doing this for me, because I kind of forgot half the film as well.
Yeah, and it's a funny action comedy that kind of defies a lot of categorization.
It's funny that his name is Wang. Or is that just that's a white guy thing? Okay, so anyway.
I'm just moving on. Yeah, I'm drop this.
Speaking of white guy thing. Yeah, there's definitely a few things that are interesting to talk about for Big Trouble in Little China. I keep wanting to say Escape from New York, but it's just because it's John Carpenter. But and Kurt Russell, yeah. So I've seen this movie. This is the second time I've watched it, And I guess before I kind of get into whether I liked it or I didn't, there's definitely some topics I think that would be fun to delve into. And maybe the first thing is just the idea of how you guys kind of look at Kurt Russell and how he and John Carpenter work together. Because Kurt Russell, in my opinion, I think he's a great actor. I don't know if he's not necessarily like a Joaquin or a Daniel Day-Lewis, but I think he's a good, I like him. And I think he could have been right up there with other action-y kind of, I think he could have been an action star. Or maybe just a, I mean, he does a lot of comedy in his roles. You see that in the Quentin stuff too. So, I don't know. I like Kurt Russell a lot, and the stuff that he pulls off for both John Carpenter and Tarantino, actually, I think is really good.
So my first introduction to Russell was with the Tarantino films. I think he was in three, if I'm correct, right? There was the Kill Bill, and there was the short Death Proof, or it was in Grindhouse, and then the Hateful Eight, I want to say. Maybe there's more. And then I even saw, like, be honest here, I saw him in Guardians of the Galaxy. Like the second one, before I even seen him in his older films, I never saw the old 80s and 70s and 90s action fest that he was in. So this is kind of still a little, like, this is all like new to me, looking at all these older films with him.
Okay.
I've always liked Kurt Russell. I think the only movies I've seen of him with John Carpenter have been this one and The Thing. I haven't seen Escape from New York yet as of right now. But I've seen him in a bunch of other stuff. Like, I love him in Death Proof and Hateful Eight. He was in Sky High, even though I don't really like that movie. He did a good job in
Oh
that
God!
role.
Everett's got high. Oh, can we watch that for next film? Oh God, please.
Oh man. There's some other things that I've seen him in, but he does a good job in pretty much everything I've seen him in. Yeah, he definitely has that really good comedy action sort of vibe. But also, like in The Hateful Eight, he really showed his range in that movie especially. So yeah, I really like him. I really like him in this movie and all the movies.
And I like that you, I thank you for bringing up The Thing, because I always fucking forget, actually, that that's a John Carpenter movie, because that's seriously one of my favorite movies. And I
Yeah.
look at John Carpenter's, like, I don't know, his filmography, and Big Trouble in Little China, for me, is probably somewhere in the middle. Or maybe higher up near the top. The Thing is right at the top for me, and then we've got some of the, I don't really like Escape from New York. I think, yeah, this is probably nearer the top, actually. And I think John Carpenter is a weirdo. I don't know. I'm not the biggest fan of Halloween. I think it's a little probably great at the time. I'm not so sure it holds up right now. I mean, it holds up. I'm just not so sure it's as engaging now as it once was, because boundaries have been pushed.
Not
So.
all genre-defining films have to be great, though. People have to recognize. Like, they don't, it doesn't have to be. It doesn't have to be a good film to like define or create a new almost genre.
Yeah. Look at Halloween and the first Friday the 13th.
Oh, man.
I'm more of a fan of I think it was like the Dream Fighters, of Freddy, personally.
If you look at Nightmare on Elm Street, I think that one holds up really great
Yeah, that one's good.
versus Friday the 13th and Halloween. I think out of the three, like, Nightmare on Elm Street is the one that holds up the best. It's like creepy.
Yeah.
It has a lot of creepy visuals, while the other ones are really boring. And either way, Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Maybe we'll get into this a little later, but I don't know where this stands in your guys' standing.
Well, for me, the two favorite John Carpenter films, in my opinion, are The Thing and They Live. Like, those are amazing.
That's him too. I always see that's the thing. Like, he's a I forget his stuff.
I haven't seen a heck of a lot other ones, but I really don't like Halloween. But I do like Big Trouble in Little China, so I guess it's kind of like in the middle with me so far too. There's a couple others I've been meaning to see for a really long time. Like The Fog, Christine. I gotta watch more John Carpenter,
Oh
apparently.
man, I saw The Fog. That was
I
passable.
my discography of John Carpenter is pretty slim pickings. I mean, I've seen They Live, I've seen The Thing, Big Trouble in Little China. I think that pretty much wraps it up for me for that one. Yeah, I think I might have seen his. No, I haven't seen anything newer from him from like the. I think he did something in like called The Ward in 2010, but I didn't actually see that film. So just out of those three films, this one for me. I mean, all fun things to view for this guy personally. I won't go into too detailed about all of them, but because I got some things to say about this film.
Yeah. Well, I don't know, is there I'll hand the reins over. Is there something that anybody specifically wanted to mention? I've got more I want to talk about, but I'll hand it over for sure.
One of the things I really liked about this film, so I watched the commentary track as well. And first off, commentary track's pretty cool. Recommend it for anybody who's interested. It's just Kurt Russell and John Carpenter kind of like talking like two old friends about this movie. And that really shows their, partially shows their great dynamic, in my opinion. But one of the things they're talking about is how back then, it was such a different movie from everything else because, like, didn't really fit in a nice little genre like a lot of the other movies. I mean, it's kind of a comedy, but apparently a lot of people didn't really see it as a comedy, just thought it was kind of awkward. It's got a lot of action, but it's also kind of got like historic Asian culture stuff in it, and a little bit of like a science fiction with the weird creatures and stuff in it. It's like this weird mishmash of stuff that kind of probably should clash, but I guess it's debatable on whether or not it does or doesn't, but for the most part, it probably doesn't. So that was one thing I thought was really interesting, looking at the kind of stuff they're trying to go for in their genre and genre bending. I guess my question to you guys is, what did you think about the genres, or if you caught on or not?
Yeah, well, I think I like kung fu movies. So I think what I definitely
Oh, yeah.
gravitated to mostly was maybe the Little China part instead of the Big Trouble. And that doesn't mean that the dare I say the sci-fi part of it wasn't good, you know, there's that part like with the big rig where it hits the guy and the guy like the samurai dude like disappears because he's maybe he is maybe he isn't a ghost. I don't, we'll get into that later maybe, but it's handled fun. It's handled that stuff is handled in a really, I guess the genre, I don't know if this is what you're getting at, but as far as genre and genre bending, I think that I like that they don't hold on that stuff for too long because it really doesn't matter. It's more or less just a way to keep the visuals going and the kind of the fun going. And but yeah, I do notice, I mean, I noticed the blend of the genres. I was just more into the again, the Little China part. You know, it's always fun to think of For me, like the difference between Jackie Chan's action movies and then like, Rambo. So.
Do you think this is kind of like more of a commentary or not a spoof, but I guess it's like how action films were back when this film was created? How it shows like, a white protagonist being the lead and saving the day while it kind of tries to subvert that expectation by having it, nah, this is what would really happen if this random person tried to like save a neighborhood type scenario.
Yeah.
It kind of, it's like a weird tangent, but I feel there's always like a thing when genres over the years can change or have these different adaptations to it. Like a good analogy I like to bring up is with superhero films, right? You have, let's talk about Marvel films a little bit here. I know Colby's gonna hate this conversation, but I just wanna, I'll go fast through it.
Definitely.
You got the standard films, coming out through like 2008, 2012, and you start to have some variations in there. You start to have Logan, a little more serious, a serious, in quotes, attempt at making a film, having a feel like having a lot more grief and having a lot more like raw emotion come through. You also have other ones like, for example, comedy like Deadpool. Again, it's more R-rated, but it's also more like, it's the same genre, but it's a little bit different. I
Or
think the same thing
Shazam.
happened. Sorry?
Or like Shazam.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I think the same thing happened with cowboy films back in the day, from the 40s all the way up to like the 80s, where they went through a lot of genre defining films and changes. I think a good example would be I had an example in my head, but how it went from a gun toting adventure to films like, I want to say, even True Grit back in 2012, or the adaptation of it, to being a lot more, I just sound kind of like a little bit silly, but gritty, and a lot more dark compared to how it was portrayed in the 50s. So there's a lot of different genres can go through a lot of different tides and turns. And I feel like this film, I think it may be wrong. I feel like it might have attempted to try something different, and it didn't really catch on when it came out.
Yeah, for sure. And you could almost say that about, I don't want to say that you could say that about a lot of John Carpenter stuff, but I think it's the way John Carpenter puts things together. I think it's, I don't know if it's like, I don't know if it's the way it's edited or like pacing, or I don't want to get off of that topic, but even like The Thing, when it first came out, was pretty well hated. It took a few years for people to get into it. And then Escape from New York is pretty like slow paced. Halloween is a slow paced movie, in my opinion. They Live is a slow paced, like all of his movies are pretty slow paced. So I think, I don't know, maybe it's a pacing thing and how it's edited, because the ideas in this are unique. You've got the ideas of Americans film action and like the Chinese action colliding. It's like, so that could be unique and fun.
I feel like this is a film that, this has been said again and again, like it's probably a little ahead of its time. Also, it wasn't. I don't. I didn't do much research on this film because I didn't really know much about it, so I want to be very fresh. Is this film considered or meant to be a spoof?
No, not exactly. John Carpenter meant for it to be just like an action comedy, but not necessarily a parody. At least that was kind of what he was saying in his commentary.
Okay, because I would initially watch this film, I had some mixed feelings, so I went back and watched it again later on, and I got the impression that it was not intentionally trying to be a spoof, but like it came off as kind of like a almost very similar to one. And I think around this time you had films coming out like Robin Hood Men in Tights and such, or people, it was just much more obvious what it was trying to be, and I feel like this film went over a lot of people's heads because of what was promised to it. Almost similar, I want to say. Do you remember Drive from 2012? 2012, I want to say. How I
Yep.
feel like people had a lot of expectations for that film, and then when it came out, it wasn't a totally different film. It was still in the same genre, but it was very, very different to what the trailers and what the promotions were talking about. And I was curious if it's similar for this film, where it was like held up to be this certain kind of adventure for this film, and then once it came out, people were like, "Hey, this isn't what I signed up for. This isn't what I wanted out of my like, I don't know how it cost like a dollar for a movie back then."
Yeah, like I think kind of people were, since it was a John Carpenter film, a lot of his films before then were kind of more serious, and a lot of them blended a little bit with horror movies or horror genre, like They Live, Halloween, The Fog, stuff like that. And since this movie doesn't take itself very seriously, even for a comedy, it kind of just gets a little bit silly and ridiculous at times, just clearly having fun. I think a lot of people were deterred by that. Like, maybe they expected it to be a little bit comedic, but there's like parts in it that are just so, what the heck? That it was almost a little too weird, I guess, for people back then, probably.
Yeah, it does seem sort of like a spoof, for sure, especially right at the beginning. I can't remember exactly what he's saying, but, you know, all Kurt Russell's doing is talking into a radio, and it's overacted on purpose. And it's funny, but it's something that you would see done in like a spoof kind of a movie. It's something.
And also the whole setting, I jump off that real fast here.
Yeah,
like the first minutes of the film, how in the first minutes of the film, they're building up Kurt Russell to be this like amazing hero, or this awesome person who's really powerful, strong. You know, he saved this whole this whole Chinatown. They build him up, and within the first like 20 minutes of the film, you kind of already get the gist of, man, this guy is doing nothing. And it's not as plainly obvious, but like as the film goes on more and more, they start showing like little, like it's not. There's this one scene, for example, where I think he shoots a gun for the first time, and he has no idea what he's doing with the gun. But it's played so fast that you almost don't notice it. I didn't notice it my first viewing, for example, and it felt very spooky watching that.
Yeah, or like he shoots the gun in the air, right, and a piece of concrete hits him on the head, knocks him out for the entire fight.
That's the funniest thing ever. Yeah. Or when he dropped his knife and he was trying to find it, all while his sidekick, quote unquote sidekick, Asian guy, like beat the crap out of everybody, and he comes back like, "All right, I'm ready," and everyone's already like unconscious.
So in this film, Kurt Russell is a sidekick, right? Like, in the universe of the film, at least, like not in his universe, in the film's universe, he is the sidekick, right?
That's kind of one of the things that has been debated, and even like John Carpenter was saying, he kind of wanted it to be a little bit ambiguous. It's like you could say either he's supposed to be the hero, or that Wang Chi's supposed to be the hero.
Wang.
And both could be right in some regards, because I mean, Jack Burton's, you know, doesn't need to be helping these guys out, but he is, versus Wang Chi actually knows about, you know, the history and the mythology and the place, and is more has the know-how.
Well, that's what makes it seem kind of spoofy also, is the idea of, like, the dumb American guy is the hero, but and it's spoofing action movies as well as you know, kung fu movies, because we're making fun of the action hero because he doesn't do anything the whole movie, and yet the kung fu masters kick the living shit out of everybody, and there you go, and here you're seeing them side by side. So it all seems very spoofy. So it's interesting to hear that he is wanted it not to be like a serious movie, but he had the spoof was nowhere in his mind when he was making it. It was just an action comedy. Yeah. It works either way. It's just both viewings. I felt the same way about that. Do you think that any of it was like subtly racist, or was it just kind of part of the movie to kind of be like that?
Well, I know one of the things he was talking about in the commentary is John Carpenter was actually kind of, a lot of people were mistaking a lot of stuff like as being kind of racist towards like the Asian community and like Chinatown and stuff like that. When John Carpenter himself apparently like is very empathetic to that sort of thing. And he'd even throughout the whole time making the film, he was asking a lot of the actors, especially like, you know, the Asian actors and other people, like trying to make sure things were still pretty culturally accurate and, you know, not in bad taste or not offensive or anything like that. So the last thing he wanted to do was have anything that was like intentionally racist or offensive or anything like that. He really did care about Asian culture, really did want to just include that in a story. So he was very what's the word,
sensitive,
yeah, like he not that but surprised to find out people thought some of it was racist and hoped that there was a way that he could have not had that, if that makes sense. I was just gonna say I don't know what the word is I'm trying to say, but yeah, you can go on.
Well, one thing I wanted to bring up was that you're talking about like how people might have views that this film was racist towards people from China or Chinese culture, and one thing I recognize over time is how like this film is the Chinese in this film are the like, you know, the culture they're discussing, it sounds to me like a lot more about American Chinese, like Big Trouble in Little China. It's in Little Chinatown. It's not in actual China, right? So a lot of things people can probably be referencing as possibly racist. Again, I don't know too much about the claims here. Is it claims towards actually Chinese main culture in mainland China or racist towards Chinese Americans? Because like those two cultures are similar, very similar to how, you know, like Italians came over to the Americas to almost create their own culture in a way. It's not very different things, but there's very like minor or there's some differences that they could, a general audience could be misinterpreted as being racist when it's actually discussing or showcasing a very similar culture, but it's just a little subculture that's different.
Yeah, and I'm not trying to make the claim that it is a racist movie, but if a bunch of white people are saying that it's racist, it's nice to get the other perspective, you know?
Yeah. I'm sure we can get on a whole topic on that, you know? Remember that thing, a whole, like, that was, like, 2 years ago, where there was a whole media thing, how the girl was wearing a traditional Chinese dress to her graduation when it was actually mostly Caucasian people who were more angry at her. It could be more of a scenario of this, where it's actually just, again, white people being mad about an Asian thing that's actually, most Asians are actually happy to be spreading out in other cultures.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm not off this topic and getting away from the film. I was just curious about like who was actually mad about this or making these claims.
That actually wasn't very clear. I don't think they ever really said, and I haven't seen anything, read anything that specifies who was the ones claiming it was racist. It was just the only thing I could take away from it was a lot of people in general.
Well,
just a lot of like anonymous.
To me, since the sense is like a spoof movie, it's like you're making fun of kung fu movies, which is probably where it's at more so than anything else, potentially.
Okay,
that could be where a lot of it comes from. A lot of people thought he was trying to spoof the whole thing, but in his mind, he wasn't trying to spoof it. He was just trying to make a comedy that doesn't make fun of anything, but it's kind of a thin line.
The actual practical effects in the, there's one scene that I want to mention. Well, practical effects and choreography with kung fu movies, I don't know if it's quite like a Jackie Chan thing, but I was glad to see that the fighting scenes were all very good without Jack Burton present, generally speaking, because he gets knocked out or he's searching for something. But they were all very well put together, and then of course there's that explosion scene of a person, which was really surprising and also really awesome. I don't know if anybody else was expecting that, but it's definitely, I don't know if it's my favorite part, but I can't say it's my favorite part, but it's definitely one of the more, like, you're going to see it a lot when you look up this online.
You got the makeup, all the prosthetic makeup stuff at that for the main bad guy when he's, like, in his full, or in his, because he goes back and forth to, like, being a younger immortal being, and then, like, kind of in a wheelchair in what his regular age is supposed to be. And when he was in that wheelchair, that all that prosthetic makeup looked so gross, but like so, maybe not fully real, but it was very grotesque.
Yeah, it was awesome. Like, I agree.
Making him so old, like, ugh.
And I really liked his voice.
And then there's that weird floating alien thing. I don't even know what the heck it was.
You mean the head?
Yeah. Like, that's where some, like, the very weirdness comes into, like, because there's that creature that just kind of shows up. We have nothing, we have no idea what it's supposed to be, what it comes from, if it's part of the mythology of, like, the sorcerer, or if it's, like, some alien. And then there's that weird hairy creature that grabs the girl, Kim Cattrall's character. Yeah. And then we never see it ever again.
I forgot about that, and the alien head. I forgot about both of those things. The alien, hairy creature is pretty creepy, but awesome. It, you know, it reminded me of, what is that thing in Star Wars?
Oh, Chewbacca?
No, not Chewbacca. The one in, I don't know. Luke has to fight it on the. It doesn't matter.
It was on Hoth. It was like some like
Hoth.
Abominable snowman sort of
thing. See, I don't know what that's called. All I know is the Tauntaun. That's all I know is the rides. That's all I know.
That hairy creature reminded me of that the Hoth creature at the beginning of that movie. But then, like, maybe even cooler, to be honest. Like, it looks cooler. But anyway.
It was a Wampa. That was what it was called.
Wampa. Are you guys cool to talk about some things in this film that probably didn't work for you guys?
Yeah, sure.
I'll start off by saying, personally for me, there was a lot of fun parts of this film and things that I missed. I went back and saw again, and gave me some new appreciation for the film. As a whole, though, I feel personally that there was still a lot of like really down, boring parts in some cases. I know, for example, I mentioned earlier the exposition, though intentional. For stopping the film, again, very similar to Spoof, how you stop the film to tell the main character what's happening or the audience, but at this point, it's literally you stopping the film because the main character knows nothing and he's just dumb. that got very boring very fast. It probably didn't help that one. My first viewing was a little bit tired, but watching those scenes made me really, really. It stretched the film out a little bit too much for me. The whole underground sequence, though, it was really fun to see. It was visually impressive. Nothing really exciting or really interesting to me really occurred. Like after that happened, until we got to the main fight sequence. The whole relationship between Russell and the damsel in distress girl. Every time they're on scene together, I felt like it was being too forced for comedy or too forced to that relationship. I just tuned out right away when I saw that happening. Maybe I missed some things during what I'm talking about here, but the film as a whole was definitely it hit more than it missed, but there were quite a few misses for me.
Yeah, I can't really remember too much specifically. I do remember there was some things that I was like, really? I know I watched it with my girlfriend the first time, and she didn't really like the movie at all. I definitely think, I don't know, I'm kind of torn on the whole, like, how it gets ridiculous, because there's some parts where it almost gets too ridiculous, But at the same time, I kind of like it for that because it's almost so bad it's good. And there's a lot of logical, bad logic here and there. Like, there's at one point where Jack runs out of ammo for his Uzi. And he's like, crap, you know, I'm all out of ammo. But then later on, he's got, like, unlimited ammo because he's, like, shooting the wall. Thing comes down and hits him. And he's, like, using the gun at other parts and never has to reload. But
could that be intentional, do you think? As a, again, okay. I see this film, and maybe I'm wrong here. I can't help but see the majority of it is just a spoof towards other action films.
Yeah, and that was one thing I was going to say. Like, at the same time, in this movie, it's kind of hard to really be like, oh, it needs to be logical in that regard, because there's so much other stuff. If you're going to be logical, why would sacrificing a girl with green eyes make someone immortal or live forever? You know, like, there's so much other stuff that makes no sense, but it kind of works for the story in the movie. Works with the mood for it, definitely. There's also how, like, in the scene where they had to, like, jump into the water and they'd, like, swim to, like, an exit, and Kim Cattrall's character, she's like, where's Jack? I need to find Jack. When before that, she was all like, I could care less about this guy. But he hadn't really done anything very impressively. The only thing he'd done was follow behind Wang Chi and, you know, lose a knife, that whole thing, while the other guy takes care of everything. So it's like, why is she all of a sudden like, oh, I love this guy, even though he didn't really do anything? And she was 5 minutes before didn't like him. That was one of those things. Is that supposed to be the joke, or did they actually think that Jack Burton was supposed to be the love interest, like, logically? Like, I don't know.
For me, it came off more as a joke. That's similar to that whole entire. I'll be honest, I like a couple ago, but like that whole entire, like, them swimming away and like the drain system, I completely forgot because I just didn't care about it. I was so bored at that point.
Well, I think that the movie, whether it was supposed to be or not, but because of its kind of, like, zaniness or its whatever, it's like ridiculousness, it turns into, or it can become a turn your brain off kind of a movie, like a popcorn munching kind of movie. Now, there's two kinds of those kind of movies, right? There's this kind of a movie that's just really wacky, and there's the, like, huge blockbuster budget movies that, like the 2012 or the, like, I don't know. I can't even think of another, Skyscrapers, stuff like that. I watch Big Trouble in Little China over the other ones anytime because this still has those fun moments. I just don't think that with that zaniness, like, the script in itself can never be smart enough to be great. It's just kind of good to make the story go and get you to the next set piece and be like, this is cool, that's cool, that's awesome kung fu, that's fucking quotable, you know what I mean? Like, the characters are more so than anything else. And then you've got, so that's kind of my take on that. The other thing I would say is with a movie like, say, Moonlight, or a movie like, some people might disagree, but Manchester by the Sea, or say even like The Shining. These movies are very narrative, and that's why, along with their technical elements, or maybe not always so technical, but this is why they can achieve the greatness. And this doesn't quite get there because of that. And then there's also some of those unclear motives that Carpenter is able to explain, which is awesome. But between all of that, it's why, for me, it can't quite, like, that's kind of my complaints. And as with any Carpenter movie, the pacing is like so fucked up. Like the first half is super engaging for me, and then the second half falls off until like the very end, where it gets really zany and crazy and ridiculous and ludicrous and whatever kind of synonym you can think of when it gets to a head all over again. Because that's where the movie's the strongest. When it's trying to be narrative, it's just not very engaging for me.
I agree with that. No, I think this is a film. This film kind of falls into the category for me of I'm not watching it for the story at all. Mm-hmm. Not to root any of the writers for this film, including John Carpenter. The story itself, I couldn't really care for. It's mostly I watched it interested for seeing that 2 to 5 minute clip I can go back to and see. And this is all, but this is more of a problem today than it was. And this film doesn't suffer from it too much. And that I feel like a lot of films that are meant to be played for comedy or action, the story is always put to the side, it feels like. And then the whole point of characters discussing or talking to each other is kind of like to get to the next point of like for this next joke or this next action scene. Almost more similar to, I make this analogy a lot whenever I talk about comedies, is it feels like a comedy film is more geared towards like this, a bunch of sketch comedies put together with little bits in between to get to the next sketch type idea. This film doesn't really fall under that category for me, but it teeters that line at times.
Yeah, it's definitely one of the things that I like/don't like about the film is how I don't watch it for the story, whereas I recognize the story probably could have been good if they really delved into the whole mythology and tried some world building, but at the same time, it's just such a... It's a movie that has a lot of style, a lot of charm, and, you know, just kind of has fun with itself. And that's the, you know, big appeal for it for me. So it's kind of like a little bit of a pro and a con at the same time.
There, you can definitely turn your brain off and enjoy it, but I feel if you do that, there's a lot of little things that occur that you're going to miss. For example, for me, I was tired of the first viewing. I went back and watched it again. And I had a new appreciation for all the little minor details that I feel like I missed between the characters. Again, I mentioned the scene with the gun when he first fired. Like it was a very slight 1 second gag where he looked at it and tried clicking it and didn't know what was happening with it. And the next scene he shoots and it's like, well, I don't know what the hell happened. Now there's very fast comedy that occurs. You don't miss anything majorly, but I feel like if you do pay attention, you get way more out of it.
I think one thing that Big Trouble in Little China has is every once in a while it has such a subtle geniusness that, like you said, is very easy to miss. I know one of the things, like, I think it's right after that scene, one of the guys asked Jack if he has ever, like, offed somebody, like, ever killed somebody, and he's like, or if this was his first time, he's like, of course not. And it's kind of like a little bit of a play on how a lot of Americans kind of have that mentality, or especially American action movie stars, where it's like they glorify having killed criminals or kill other people. Something that America's culture just does a lot, glorifying murder.
Yeah. And
it's like that subtlety of it that kind of makes it a little bit genius.
Yeah, and you know, he's the front cover with a gun and all that, so you know, he's not the Rambo, he's not the Terminator or the Die Hard, you know what I mean? He's like, of course not.
Side note, I had to go actually look up geniusness because I thought that was an actual word. Turns out it's not. Trick me, Devin. God damn it.
Hey, I make up my own words also. No, but
subtle genius. There you go.
but he had said, because the guy asked him if he'd ever kill anybody and or if he had never killed anybody, and he said, of course. He was trying to say that he, of course, had killed people before. Kind of like going with like the, he's got to stay macho. He didn't say that, of course not, he hasn't killed anybody. If that makes sense?
Yeah, no. I think that's definitely more intentional to the... Again, I say it's more of a spoof, so I'm going to defer to that road again and again. When something happens, I find more comedic and intentional. How would you think a film like this being released now, but from the viewpoint of the American Chinese characters, and having Kurt Russell being kind of coming in and trying to act all tough and seeing it from their point of view.
I think that whole super macho, because back then the big thing in American action movies was like the super macho, super tough biker trucker sort of cowboy almost. But nowadays it's more of like edgelord, just somber and quiet guy or mysterious guy. So I feel like it wouldn't have as much clout today.
Yeah.
Like John Wick versus like Terminator on a motorcycle kind of a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, or that quiet guy who sits beside a window, you know, in a Japanese classroom. That edgy? Yeah. I know what you're talking about. Yeah, I get it.
Basically.
I'm sorry.
All the same people, right, as we're talking about? Same edge, right?
Basically, yeah.
See, Cole's laughing because he's making a weeb joke here.
No, I'm not.
How dare you bring that into my podcast?
Yeah, no, I think I'm ready to tell you guys what my rating is for this, unless you guys have anything else to mention.
I'd be going over everything I already said already in just more bad detail.
Okay.
Yeah, I think I've said everything that was on my mind.
Thank God.
Okay. Well, I would say that I give this movie a 3 out of 5, and I know I praised it a lot, but as I hopefully mentioned, and I hopefully make sense, it's just hard to get something. It's hard to give something a really, really high rating if it's not, I don't know, if it's obviously not reaching its full potential in a narrative way. So, although the set pieces are nice, and Kurt Russell's pretty awesome, and all that good stuff, it's just, and it's a good movie, and I'll watch it again. But like Cole had mentioned, you know, watching various clips on YouTube is maybe something I might find myself doing, as opposed to watching the entire movie of Moonlight or, you know, Children of Men. So yeah, 3 out of 5. Devin, what do you think?
I also gave it a 3 out of 5, actually. Similar thing, I like the movie a lot, but one thing I've talked about with, I think, Colby and a couple other people that have had different views than me, I call it a so bad it's good almost sort of movie, whereas a lot of people just say it's just good, just because it's so ridiculous. It feels like it needs to be in that category for me. It's one of those movies that I'd definitely watch again, but I couldn't watch it too often. It'd have to be quite a while in between views. So that's why I couldn't really give it more than a 3 out of 5.
Yeah, so not to cut Cole off, but to say it's so bad it's good is a pretty backhanded compliment to the movie, in my opinion, because generally speaking, a so bad it's good movie is something that's like a real piece of shit that is so fucking bad you laugh at it, and that's why it's good. So something like, obviously, like The Room, something like Slugs, if you've ever seen it, something like
Neil Breen.
Well, the thing Neil is, Breen. The biggest reason, I guess, why I consider this one that is because the plot line is kind of bad.
Sure.
And yeah, the rest of the movie's not bad, but the storyline's definitely so bad that it's good.
I would hard disagree, which is fine. You know, I think it's got the budget, I think it's got the production value, I think it's got the actors, I think it's got a lot of basically everything except for the script, which can still make it so a movie so bad it's good, but
I guess I could put it this way. I feel like I could do a marathon with this movie and Samurai Cop and I feel like I'm missing one that's kind of similar. But I feel like it would kind of be a similar mood, atmosphere.
Okay, I agree with that. But Big Trouble in Little China was attempting that mood, whereas Samurai Cop was trying to be a, like, serious action.
Are you saying it's not?
Yeah, it's...
I'm saying it is not. I'm saying that Samurai Cop fails at everything it attempts to do, and that's why it is so funny.
All right. Hey, is it my turn now?
Yeah, go nope. for it.
I think the way
All right, guys, me... thanks for being what? Part of the UFO.
No. Oh. All right. Fine, I'll take a little longer now. So the way I like to view films is I start in the half. You know, in this case, 2.5 is a half for me, right? And depending on what a film can do, it can go up or down on that scale. There are scenes in this film that range from like a 1 to like a to 4 out of 5 for me. Like, there's a real range to this film. As a fun factor, I enjoyed this film a lot, you know? And just because the film's just fun for me, I usually want more of a film. So even though it's fun and exciting in some portions, the other portions that bring it down pretty hard. So after everything that's said and done, I'm currently at probably a 2.5, leaning towards 3, but still at 2.5.
Yeah. No, I think we're all in agreement about, besides that it's so bad it's good, that's just
Yeah, no, he's weird. Stupid.
There's a lot of just...
I'm sorry. It's not stupid, Devin. I respect your opinion. It's just very, very wrong.
There are just parts that are just so ridiculous, I find myself almost laughing at it instead of with it. Like, the weird hairy creature that never shows up ever again. It's like, what the...
Okay, so there's baffling decisions. Okay, I agree. So, a bad movie, a so bad it's good movie, has baffling decisions that question you, that make you question it. But I still hard disagree.
It's on the low end of so bad it's good. It's like it barely touches that status.
All right. So, yeah. Thanks, everybody, for checking in to the UFO today on this episode where we were taking a look at Big Trouble in Little China.
Can't hear you down too much.
Next time we'll be taking a look at some other movie. Who knows? But hopefully
it's your
we'll
turn.
See you then.
I mean, you know, it's your turn. Don't say who knows.
I have a couple ideas of movies, but
now though, okay, I see how it is.
I got a couple of movies. Some ideas. I'll talk to you guys later about it.
Can't wait to see Cole give that one a 2.5 too.
Yeah, for sure. This was a 2.5 also, you dildo.
Hey, out of all the 2.5s, it's currently, well, I don't know. I think I'd edge out the what was that ghost film we watched? Or the fuck with the girl, the guy who choked her, the man? Fuck.
Invisible Man was a unique movie to an extent.
Yeah.
And you can't lie.
Yeah. Out of all the 2.5s I've given, it's the highest so far.
All right. See you later, everybody.
See ya.
Morning.